Eleanor. M31.000. Chapter 15. It was a world laid low and then made anew, a testament to the newly unfettered power of humanity, the high tide mark of its burgeoning power. The Emperor had become both creator and destroyer, the commander of an imperium that could reshape the physical galaxy into whatever image it desired. The Legiones Astartes were his right hand of vengeance, the Mechanicum his left hand of restitution. Now the planets themselves were baubles, mere fragments of rock to be hewn afresh and recast. After the Inferno, the last retreat of the Orc warlord Urlak Urg had been burned down to its core, excised of all remnants and made pure for a new age. Yasugai did not even know what it had looked like before. Perhaps it had been a swamp world, infested with splashing columns of hane marching under thick vines, or a desert, or a teeming hive, or a ball of ice. He found himself looking for clues, kicking over the rubble to seek a sign of how things had been, but found nothing. Eleanor's gravel was lifeless now, a dust of almost inert semi-fused rock, ready for the terraformers to move in and begin the process of settlement. There were no clues left, nothing that would ever tell an observer that once an empire had been spawned here, one that had briefly risen up and challenged the growing domain of mankind. Carthago delenda est. How many humans would know what those words meant? How many Terrans, whose world had birthed them, and how many on the thousands of newly populated and rediscovered orbs, all frantically developing and building and reaching upwards to a dimly understood but fantastically powerful future? Just a handful, maybe, who had access to lost books written in dead languages. History had a penchant for repeating itself, though, for rehearsing old patterns in ever grander circuits, even if the participants had forgotten their origins. Yasugai walked further along the massif. Iron-black rocks were scattered away from him in every direction, a dry crust over life-crushed soil. It was hot, almost as hot as Baal had been, though he did not know whether this was from the munitions unleashed in the atmosphere or because Eleanor had always been that way. The air was gritty and unpleasant, and the wind barely picked up from a faint stir that wafted against the exposed flesh of his face. He had walked far after the great ceremony, wearied by its overblown triumphalism. The Khan had given him license to stay away for a long time, and so he had taken the chance, exploring the crevices and peaks of the world, trying to divine what had made it such a totem for the orcs before the end had come for them. They had fought here longest and hardest, even more so than they had on their sentinel worlds. If Horus had not been there, if the War Master had not been there, it might have gone another way. They had to remember that now. Amid all the recriminations, bewilderment, and envy, they had to remember that it had been the 16th Legion that had broken the enemy. Maybe another Legion could have done it. Maybe not. It didn't matter now. The deed was completed. The announcement made, the balance of legions turned upside down. Even after a lifetime of service in the Crusade, he still did not know many warriors of the 16th. They had always struck him as a coarse and brutal people, overly proud of their martial record, unwilling to share glory, and possessed of the obsessions of pre-eminence. They were hardly alone in that, but the tendency could only get worse now. So Yasugai had avoided them, both during the triumph and also in the aftermath. The only conversation of significance had come just before the great processions, when thousands of warriors mingled on the avenues under the shadows of Titans, pressed up against one another so that no avoidance was possible. The warrior had had pale skin, dark hair, sunken eyes. His manner had been proud yet brittle, his eyes darting. Yasugai had sensed the power there, though heavily curtailed, bound under layers of control for a very long time, as if weight and vigilance had ever had purchase over such things. "You are Yasugai," the warrior had said, pushing his way in close. Isugai had nodded. They hadn't met before. He would have remembered. But something about him was dimly familiar.
Jereth,
the warrior had said. I am named Jereth. I spoke to one of your order? A very long time ago, I suppose.
Is that so?
I've thought about him often in the years since. His steel-grey eyes had flickered. The Librarius is everywhere now. His were prophetic words, and I do not forget them. In the distance, war horns had blared. The skies had churned, the first stirrings before his own craft began their long descent. Isugai had not found an adequate reply. Courtesy had demanded he remain engaged, but he had found he had no wish to. Something about this Jereth had been unsettling.
"You speak of Borghal?"
he had asked, gauging the name from the resonance around them. Jereth had seemed not to register that.
"Know this,"
he had said. "I came to believe he was right. I did nothing to sabotage his overtures, truly. My master was already looking to the future. If things had been different, he would have backed the project. He remained aloof. That was for other reasons." Isugai had said nothing. "It failed at that world, at Garbangar. No one will ever know it, but it failed there. Once he saw what was on offer, he couldn't be seen to take sides."
"All must take sides in the end," Isugai had said.
"Not always."
Jereth had looked up at the growing torment in the heavens. Dust storms were kicking up, driven by powerful thruster downdrafts.
"Does he live,
the Stormseer?"
"No. Died in battle."
Jereth had looked genuinely pained.
"I had hoped to speak to him again."
And then the skies had split open, riven by columns of flame. The crowds had surged forwards, separating the two of them, and no more words were said. That had been days ago. After the last fervour of it all had died away, Isugai left, treading paths that a year ago had been burning and echoing with screams, and were now nothing at all, a blank sheet of parchment, a fresh start. He detected the tracer signal following him a long time before he did anything about it. He had not been alone, truly alone, for a very long time, and he was in no hurry to change that. After a while, he began to be amused by its tenacity. He could walk a long way before becoming remotely fatigued, something even motorized transports struggled to match in that shattered landscape, and so the follower would surely give up soon. But it kept coming. In the end, he chose to crest a particularly challenging scarp and waited at the summit. He watched the crawler pick its way up the dry valley below, rocking on its axis and labouring on damaged tracks. The world's sunlight was already beginning to fade, smeared to grey in a toxin-rich atmosphere. So many explosives had been detonated in the planet's air that it would take decades of mechanicum scrubbers to make it even vaguely safe to breathe. The crawler came to a halt at the base of the cliff, and a slender figure got out. From the way the figure moved, Isugai determined it was a woman, relatively old, in only moderate fitness, and poorly equipped for the terrain. No doubt she was the one he had been informed about, the Terran whose inquiries had been more persistent than those who had come before. He might have picked his way down the slope then to intercept her, but decided to wait, to see how keen she really was for a meeting. He withdrew from the edge, turning away to look up at the scudding clouds, feeling the hot wind on his exposed neck. He felt curiously dislocated then. The woman, making her way up the steep clifftop, suddenly became a source not of curiosity, but of doubt. He could hear her breathing from afar, hear the scratch of boots against scree. He still could have walked away. She would not have been able to follow for long. He needed neither sustenance nor rest. She would last only a short while before having to turn back. Isugai felt his heart rate begin to pick up. For some reason he wished to be elsewhere, another place, anywhere but there. The clouds were still racing overhead, the soils were still hot, his mouth became drier. He had no future sense. The Khan was right. That was a curse, a way for the gods to mock rather than bless. And yet, Just then, a whole succession of strange images ran through his mind. He saw worlds burning, ones he recognized, ones he didn't. He heard a voice crying out his name, and somehow knew it was this woman's, though he had no idea why she was doing it. He steadied himself. She had got herself in trouble. He could hear her losing her footing. If she slipped now, the fall would likely kill her, and whatever purpose she had in coming here would go with her. The urge to leave her alone was powerful, like a weight on his limbs. He hurried back up to the edge of the cliff, just in time to see her teeter on the brink, her hands missing their hold. He reached out, catching her by the wrist, and it felt as fragile as glass in his powerful grip.
"General Ilya Revalion, Departamento Munitorum," he said. "Be careful."
She looked up at him. He could see her face through a transparent helm visor, caked in dirt and sweat and visibly shaken. She was too weak for that ascent, but something told him that she would not have given up, but would have fought her way to the summit against all common sense. He could sense the determination there, the mental toughness, as formidable as her body was weak.
"Thank you," she said. "I will."
5 days passed. The fleet was making preparations to leave again. It was no trivial thing to arrange for the orderly departure of those behemoths of the void. Refueling, reprovisioning, rearming, it all took time, and the labour of many thousands of menials. The matter was complicated by the presence of other legions in system, all of whom made their own demands on an overstretched imperial administration. No greater gathering of Primarchs had ever taken place, and every one of the assembled brothers took the chance to converse with his sundered kin, knowing that the chance would not come again for a long time. Emperor's children warriors mingled with the Lunar Wolves. Death Guard infantry exchanged terse words with World Eaters' pit fighters. The White Scars, as ever, kept themselves away from the hot centre, preferring the void to Eleanor's blasted plains. Eventually, though, Isugai returned to the surface, taking a lander down for the human woman, as he had promised. There were sound military reasons for that. She was a general, one whose long service had not dulled a certain native commitment to the cause, and the Khan's desire to bring the White Scars more into the mainstream of the Imperial war effort would require allies. Some of those were drawn from his peers, the Angel, the Magician of Prospero. Others had to be taken from less lofty stock. Revalion had, after all, asked for the audience. As ever, the remaking of the Legion was a work in progress. It would never have an end, and even its beginning was already starting to be forgotten. It had become hard to tell the Terrans from the Chigorians, at least amongst those who had served for any length of time. Perhaps they would never excise their weaknesses. The important thing, as Kinja was fond of observing, was to make the attempt. Isugai did not speak much to the woman on the orbital ascent. She was nervous, almost cripplingly so, but there was little other than platitudes that could be said. A space marine was an exalted creature, a Primarch so much more so. That such creations were necessary was a marker of just how hostile the galaxy truly was. Better that the masses never knew too much about them and merely gazed up in awe from a distance. But he had sympathy for her for all that. She looked frail, like the almost forgotten bird on the far side of that barely remembered Terran pane of glass, and there was only so much a determined mental attitude could compensate for.
"Try to understand him," he said calmly. "He may even like you. I have seen stranger things."
They docked soon afterwards, weaving through the clusters of void craft drifting around the sword storm. From there, it was a long walk to the Khan's chambers, during which her agitation only grew. In the end, she did well enough, looking him in the eye, answering his questions honestly and without bluster. Isugai watched her the whole time, ready to step in if the transhuman dread became too much. It was unfortunate, perhaps, that the War Master chose that moment to make his long-promised appearance. Horus was a bruising, dominating presence, even for Yasugai. It was hard to know how much that had always been the case, or whether the triumph had altered him somehow. Now the four of them were thrown together. Warmaster, Primarch, Stormseer, human, as if in some kind of descending allegory of psychic evolution.
"My brother,"
said the Khan, getting up to greet him.
"Jagatai,"
said Horus. There was already an inequality between them. Before, they had been nominal equals, part of an order without formal rank, albeit with a constant churn of rivalries and internal standings. Now the hierarchy had been made concrete. The Emperor had gone back to the throne world, and his favoured son had been appointed Master of the Crusade. That changed everything. Yasugai could see it. Perhaps even Revalian could sense it. Horus seemed to have grown in stature, although he still exuded that old and easy charisma. The change was enough to make the exchanges stilted and awkward.
"We should fight together again, you and I," Horus said to the Khan. "It has been too long, and I miss your presence. Things are uncomplicated with you. I wish you would not hide yourself away."
It sounded like a compliment. Perhaps it was. Yasugai knew his master well enough, though, to notice the faint resistance there, the merest whisper of detachment.
"I can usually be found," said the Khan. "In the end."
It was not a long encounter. Horus had places he needed to be, and the Khan was already restless for onward movement. They discussed deployment to Chondax, but in a curiously impersonal way, as if it were merely the afterthought of a completed task, rather than the next stage in a crusade that was not yet over. Yasugai said nothing. Revalian said nothing. The Khan and Lupercal spoke on, perhaps too freely, as if they were acting out the part of brothers now, having forgotten what it was to truly be in the role.
"The galaxy is changing," said the Warmaster, amiably enough. "There is much I do not understand about it, and much I do not like. Warriors should remain close. I hope that I can call on you if the time comes."
For a moment, Yasugai wondered what the response would be. No one else, perhaps not even the Emperor himself, would have spoken to the Khan in that way.
"You know you can, brother," said the Khan. "That is always how it has been between us. You call, I answer."
And that was it. That was the substance of it. No formal treaties, no arrangements for rendezvous within a specific time frame. No doubt the details could be ironed out later, but even so, it was a paltry basis on which to proceed. Yasugai and the Khan left the chamber after that, escorting Horus back to his shuttlecraft, from where he would go on to command the entire network of expeditionary fleets. On the way down to the hangar level, the Khan caught Yasugai's eye, and for a moment a wariness could be glimpsed there. The two Primarchs embraced formally, exchanged further promises to campaign together, and then the Warmaster stalked up the long ramp and inside the intra-fleet shuttle. Once the lander had boosted up, swiveled around and pushed down the length of the long hangar, the White Scars Primarch turned to his counselor. Yasugai looked back.
"What do you make of that?"
Yasugai asked.
"He came to warn me," the Khan said. "That at least was good of him."
"Even now they try to destroy what has been created."
"He remained neutral for too long. Now he has to remain so. Of all my failures, that may be the greatest."
"He knew what he wanted," Yasugai said. "He knew it from the start."
The Khan smiled grimly.
"Prepared for the challenge, though, Zadyanaga? I have another world in mind for you now."
"Baal was disagreeable."
"This one is barely habitable."
"I begin to wonder if you select them deliberately."
The Khan started to walk.
"They see us as no more than orc hunters. We did that job too well for them. and now they give us nothing else. I cannot refuse, Chondex, but someone must represent us at the conclave. We always knew it would come, and I would have wished you to be there anyway. You are the most eloquent of us all.
Not in Gothic.
Then you must work harder. We all must.
They entered the glistening corridors, thick with decoration.
This is all we have left now. Horus cannot be an ally, for he is no longer an equal. What is a war master but another Malkador? And what is Malkador but the voice of his master?
Then we will hunt on our own.
It'll take us away from the scheming.
The Khan's lips curled in distaste.
My brothers are already jockeying. Some are jealous. Some see their chance now.
And you, Kargan?
I want no part of it. It sickens me.
He halted at twin golden doors, each marked by fine calligraphy.
That woman. She has a fierce soul. You think she's strong enough?
Isugai thought back to her expression at the clifftop.
Undoubtedly.
Make her an offer, then. Whatever she wants. We need to be more self-sufficient, and for that, we'll need help.
By your command.
The Khan reached out, tracing the line of the glyph on the left hand of the doorway. The chitin figure Gianoa glistered under the lumens. It denoted warning and foreboding, but also misplaced caution. The glyph was inscribed at the beginning of journeys as both a guard against pride and an injunction against faint-heartedness. Many of the fleet starships had it beaten into the prow in gold-chased adamantium, the first thing an enemy would see before the lances ignited.
I should never have engaged,
the Primarch said, half to himself, half to Isugai.
I never believed in unity from the start. But now even my father has given up the pretense. What were we fighting for so long? To merely become the Xenos hunters of another general?
You told him you would answer.
The Khan looked at his counselor.
We'll be on Chondax for a long time. We may never come back.
Isugai smiled.
Eternity is a long way off.
The Khan snorted a laugh.
You should find the general again before she runs away. She's of the Imperium. If we aren't going to be a part of it, we can still learn from it. After that, the conclave on Nykaia. That's the last strand of this I care about, and when it's settled, we'll forge our own path, just as we always did.
You do not mean that, Isugai said. You are Terran-born, Kargan. One day that world will call you back.
So what if it does?
Said the Khan, passing under the archway, leaving the sigil behind.
I care nothing for it.
I do not believe you,
Isugai said, calling after him. The Khan continued walking.
You are too indulgent towards them,
he said.
Learn to let them go.
From Alanor, the fleet pushed hard spinwards, pulling all resources out system and into the deep void. It was met 3 days later by the secondary attack group, long engaged in conjunction with the Lunar Wolves during the final phases of the push towards Ork-held fortress asteroids, but now freed up for new tasking. 3 weeks after that came another rendezvous, this time a long way into scarcely charted space. 7 line battleships, fresh from a long-planned assault against a different Xenos species, the Mjordhain. More than 16 had been expected at that nexus, but the Khan could not wait for all of them to muster, and so the fleet pressed on, picking up momentum. Others would have to follow when the tidings reached them, whenever that was. There were more points of meeting as the long, scattered segments of the White Scars Legion came together again, dragged into a great conglomeration, ship after ship, brotherhood after brotherhood. There had never been a gathering of such size, and in its wake they left only a network of scattered garrisons and contingents running too far beyond comms range to be hastily recalled. The Legion was pulling its full strength together, and over the years that strength had grown indeed. Once mustered, the navigators held conclave and set the coordinates, settling down into the trances that would guide them through the substrate of dreams. The warp engines ignited, thrumming down long energy conduits created on Mars decades, even centuries ago, and sending the knife-proud battleships hurtling towards their destination. Transit was prolonged, hampered by a steady turbulence in the warp. Naram-Bhatar said it was as if something vast were turning uneasily in its sleep, and it made progress dangerous. In the interim, the Brotherhoods trained and re-equipped, restoring their physical condition and putting both weapons and armour through the forges. Squads that had never before heard of one another were thrown together into new attack groups, organised under the auspices of the general taken so recently from the Imperium's Departamento Munitorum. Some were Chagorian, some Terran, some a mixture of both, and hasty work was done to consolidate the various divergent command doctrines that had emerged over 120 years of continuous operations. It would not be enough, and there was never enough time, and no doubt things were missed or looked over. But it was a start. Eventually, the fleet slid back through the veil on the edge of its destination. The sprawling Chondak system, a scatter of many dozen worlds, thrown out in a long, thick-starred arc, spreading from the Paraban deeps out towards the extreme fringes of the Alaxes Meta-Quadrant. The Swordstorm was first, as ever, swimming up from the abyss with its bridge levels shimmering in ether residue. Then came the Chinzar, the Lance of Heaven, and the rest, one after the other, the great starships gliding in formation out from the netherworld and into the visible. The Khan watched the formation take shape, an elegant void dance that showed off his warrior's ship mastery to good effect, and the first twitch of a smile flickered across his tense-held lips. He stood up, leaving the command throne and walking to the rim of the terrace that overlooked his many-tiered bridge. Hundreds of menials, servitors, and naval staff worked in the pits below, some on suspended platforms, others attending to the vast semicircular banks of sensor nodes and cogitator clusters. Warriors from his keshig stood sentinel amid the echoing spaces, their glaives held rigid like the halberds of ancient Quo fortress guardians. Ahead of them, heavy shutters pulled back, revealing an armour-glass aperture with a dazzling view of the pure void ahead. Stars glinted in a vivid band of silver against black, a tiny fragment of the galactic arm that still remained for conquest, the undiscovered country now marked off for them alone.
"Status, General," the Khan said.
Revalian looked up from her station. She had not quite lost the air of half-fear, half-exasperation that had been with her since her appointment, but she was getting better at hiding it.
"Anomalous readings from all ships," she reported, her brow furrowing. "I'm having problems with the comms. Astropaths reporting significant difficulties."
She looked up towards him.
"Unless this clears up, we'll have trouble restoring contact with the Imperium."
The Khan nodded.
"Excellent."
From further down in the bridge depths came the telltale hiss and crackle of teleportation energies. Moments later, two warriors clad in Terminator battleplate lumbered up to the command level, each bearing the markings of Noyan Khan, their ivory warplate decked in the tribal insignias of their respective hordes. The first was Jemulan, Gearhun's replacement. The second was Hasik. Both bowed before the Primarch, then turned to face the star field ahead. Finally, as the last of the real space protocols were completed and the warning chimes faded away, Kinjar emerged to join them, and the quartet lined up along the great balcony overlooking the bridge terraces. For a while, No one said anything. The worlds they had come for were out there, still a long way from visible range, but nestled within that cascade of light and dark. The names were known to all of them. Germanio, Femus, Gion, Epihelicon, Chondax. Those were prey names now, markers for a waning species destined to die at their hand. Just as it had been at Huda, at Ullinor, at 100 other sites across the growing Imperium, the anticipation of the hunt coursed like static electricity across every bridge of every ship in the fleet. The Khan placed his gauntlets on the railing.
"Prepared, Noyan Khan?"
he asked Jemulan.
"Absolutely, Kargan," he replied.
"And you, Hasik? Last to the muster again?"
"I slay faster when in a hurry."
Kinjar smiled. For all his unmatchable calmness, even he was poised for the plunge now, just as they all were. Down below in the hangars, drop pods and gunships were already being lifted into position, ready for the deadly cargo that marched towards them through the muster halls.
"Far from reach now," the Khan said. "I didn't realize how much I missed it."
The deck trembled underfoot as machinery shifted and slotted into place. Orbital weaponry was being prepared by the deck gangs, and the plasma drives were keying up to full efficiency.
"We never needed anyone but ourselves."
The sensorium began to calibrate the first ingress runs. Germanio was first, a world they said was crawling with Hane so thickly that the ground was barely visible. Then the others would follow, in ordered procession, ending with Chondax itself, a mini Ullinor, and the last known stronghold of Xenos in the Segmentum.
"They'll come back for us, Kargan," said Kinjar. "One day."
The Khan nodded.
"That they will,"
he said, gaze fixed on the void ahead.
"But not this day."
The first auger soundings returned, pinpointing the target world and giving readings for the gravity well. The run-in sequence would commence within moments, and after that the old cycle would begin again, the one rehearsed for a lifetime on the plains and now elevated to the total war of the heavens. They had always been star hunters.
"On this day, brothers," the Khan said, "we show them the storm."
That was Jagatai Khan, Warhawk of Chogoris, written by Chris Raitt, read by Jonathan Keeble. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2018.